I am J. Christian Adams. This is the Protecting Your Vote podcast from the Public Interest Legal Foundation. We do election integrity and all things voting, and we most of all want to protect your vote. With me today is a relatively new Public Interest Legal Foundation lawyer. I'd like to introduce to everybody Sam Swanson.
Thanks, Christian. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Sam, we usually, so far we've been sort of introducing some of the lawyers, some of the board members in this podcast. We talk about election issues, but today I want to talk about a number of things, some of which don't involve elections, and basically let people know the kind of the work we do. You are a graduate of what I think is, frankly, I will say this, and I'm not exaggerating, really the top law school in the country, in my view. Like, if I was going to hire lawyers, let's take the top 25, 30 law schools, I'd skip Harvard, I'd skip Yale, I'd skip Stanford, because those guys can't practice law, right? I'm just saying, go look at PJ Media. Hans von Sapkowski and I did a whole series called Do They Teach Law Anymore? And you can find out what's going on in the top 10 law schools. You graduated from George Mason, and what's its new fancy name?
The Antonin Scalia School of Law.
Right. Now, that says it all, right?
Yep.
Named after one of the great Supreme Court justices. I'm a huge fan of George Mason law grads. We've had the clerks here from George Mason, Bradley Fellows from George Mason. You guys do terrific work.
Yeah, George Mason really tries to send out real lawyers who are ready to practice. I mean, practice is very much the focus of the education there. And I have nothing but great things to say about my time there.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. The differentiating thing is the lawyers and the law clerks that we've had from George Mason seem ready to actually practice law. It's not like they want to argue with you about the dormant commerce clause and the implications of the slaughterhouse cases on social welfare. It's like, we're going to be lawyers. We're not going to be philosophers. And that's one of the things I like.
Exactly. And they're big on legal writing. We had 2 full years of legal writing. So they want you to be ready to go, ready to know how to write the way courts want to see things written down and submitted to them. So like they're really pushing that hard. And I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah. I'm going to have to send the link to this podcast over to some people, professors I know at George Mason. So lots of good things to say. If you're thinking about law school and you don't want to go to a crazy institution like Yale or Harvard or Stanford, go to George Mason. So you hail from one, which I think is actually one of those beautiful states in the country. It is one of the sort of strangest states in the country in some ways, like the black soil that I see there. You're from North Dakota.
I am from North Dakota, so there's not a whole lot of us.
Yeah, that is, you might be one of, now I think the Secretary of State from North Dakota used to be a guy named Al Jaeger, mm-hmm. Al Jaeger. I knew him. I don't know if I know anybody else from North Dakota. Well, we have a client. We did a case in North Dakota before you were here. But there's maybe like 500,000 of you.
I think it's about 600,000 now, something like that. So about the size of D.C.,
right.
The city of D.C. So.
And after undergrad, you made your way east. By the way, what took you to George Mason? That's an interesting question. I don't think we've ever asked.
It was right here in D.C. It was the great school and got in. And it was kind of a no-brainer when I wanted to go to law school.
Right.
My choice is kind of in this area. Absolutely George Mason.
So. Cool. So one of the things I've noticed about North Dakota is, and it's true, they only have one congressman, I think, right? It's one of the few states that have one member of Congress, Wyoming, I think maybe Alaska. It is a rugged place. Like, I don't want to get caught in January in North Dakota.
No, it gets real cold and you can get some real nasty blizzards. My parents talk about how it got so cold that they used to have to take the battery out of their car every night.
Oh my God!
Bring it inside, otherwise it wouldn't start in the morning. So
yeah, I often wonder if they build houses differently, like the pipes and the walls, like are further away from the outside. Like I see weather in the winter, the Weather Channel say, oh, it's -46 in Bismarck, and I thought, isn't that killing everyone there?
it's one of those things you just kind of get used to it, I guess.
Right. Okay. So here at the Public Interest Legal Foundation, I'm on with Sam Swanson, an attorney here at PILF. You've gotten to work on some really interesting cases. And when we were talking about this podcast, I was thinking, most people out there who just live in the real world don't even know about some of the wild stuff that you're involved with. Let's start with Kansas and fusion voting. Let me say it one more time because some people are saying, what's that? Fusion voting. What is this?
Yeah, fusion voting is not something most people would ever hear about. It's not very common in the United States anymore. But essentially, it's when your name is on the ballot multiple times for different parties. And you, you know, if you get a vote for either party, that counts as your vote. So if you get a vote for the Democratic Party or the Green Party or Republican Party and the Libertarian Party, all of those votes add up together.
In the final count.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like to short circuit explaining this to people by saying this is what they do in New York, right?
Yes, it is in New York. New York still does it. There's a few other places still kind of that do it every once in a while, but that's common than it was.
And have you ever figured out, and you, I don't know if we did, and by the way, we did a brief in this case. There's a case in Kansas where I don't even know who the plaintiff is, to tell you the truth.
United Kansas v. Schwab is the name of the case.
Okay. And there, what are the plaintiffs claiming in the case?
The plaintiffs, they want, right now Kansas has a ban on fusion voting. They don't allow it on their ballots. The allegation is that that is in violation of the United, or the Kansas Constitution. And it violates sort of their free speech rights to be on the ballot multiple times.
And Public Interest Legal Foundation did an amicus brief in this case. Yes. And we're on which side?
We sort of supported the idea that there's not really a right to be on the ballot multiple times, which kind of echoes the thought this has been rejected by federal courts. It's been rejected by state courts kind of countrywide.
Does this have some sort of origin story, like out of like, I don't know, like progressive politics of the early 20th century? I mean, where's this coming from? Have you ever figured this out? Because I haven't. We should have talked about this before
it's
the podcast.
Sort of a product of the Gilded Age, sort of a long time ago. It used to be a lot more popular. It's some people see it as a moderating factor. You get more third parties who get, you know, some sway in elections. But I think the studies really don't bear that out. And it just gives parties more control over who gets to run under, you know, in the election.
Did you find or put in the brief, I think so, some wild stories out of New York that use fusion voting? Like, was there like criminal behavior? Or something? I can't remember what the particulars were.
There's sort of some criminal behavior aspects of it. A lot of abuse by the parties, you know, trying to get your candidate on multiple parties' ballots so that you can really do better than you're supposed to. So it's really a way of party control over the.
Interesting. So anyhow, Public Interest Legal Foundation filed a brief opposing the constitutional right to have fusion voting in Kansas. That case is United Kansas versus Schwab, Secretary of State of Kansas, and we're on the side of the Secretary of State. Now, before we turn to another hot, burning, wild election issue, which, by the way, I'll tease, you don't have a right to a secret ballot if you're in Texas. We'll get to that in a second. I want to take up something that for me is almost just as important. And that's a tradition in my house every 4 years of watching curling. Now, I have started watching curling in off cycles with Arn on the Olympics. You know something about curling.
Yeah, I curled all through high school and college.
So. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a fun sport. It's an easy sport to get into if there's a curling rink around. They're very welcoming to new people that just want to give it a shot and try it. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is like talking to someone who does like falconry, you know, like you're a rare bird.
Yeah.
How about that? Those of you who don't watch the Winter Olympics, curling is this, it's like bowling on ice sort of, but that's overstating it. And it's wildly popular, right?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more popular ever since it started in the Olympics. America won gold in Olympics. So after that, you know, skyrocketed in popularity there too.
And it's usually on like MSNBC and CNBC. It's like on the upper channels in the late afternoons, which presents some problems for me because I'm usually not at home watching. We have a case in Utah, Salt Lake City. We filed a case in June. It's to get transparency in the voter rolls in Utah. When I was there, I talked to some people because, you know, the Olympics are coming back to Salt Lake City.
Right.
I think in 32. No, it's in 30 maybe. I can't remember, but it's soon come back. They are moving the curling from, I think, Ogden, the Ogden Ice Sheet was the name, to Salt Lake City because of its popularity. They want a bigger venue.
Yeah. If they have a nice rink there or if they're going to build a rink, I'm not sure. But
do you have to wear special shoes like in bowling?
Yeah. So professional curlers will have a special shoe that has like really good grip on one side. And then the other side is a Teflon plate so that you can slide around on that shoe.
That's why I see them like pushing with one leg, mm-hmm. even when they're just walking around the rink and sliding with the other.
Yep.
I never knew
your
that.
Left shoe will have Teflon so you can slide around.
So you probably can find them on Amazon now, but I bet there was a time where once you got outside of North Dakota, you could not find anywhere that sells curling shoes.
No, I don't. Yeah. There's only a few places even in North Dakota where you can buy them too. They're not super common, but.
And how heavy are they called stones?
Stones or rocks.
I mean, are they hard to pick up?
They're about 40, I think they're 46 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And they all come, they're all made out of a specific granite off of one island in Scotland.
Cool. Right?
So they're all the exact same rock.
It's almost like, in a way, it's like chess. Like when you watch a curling match, the moves are planned in advance. Mm-hmm. And that's what's appealing to me, in part because I don't know how they're planned in advance. Like I don't get it, but I want to try to figure it out and decode it.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of strategy there. But the difference between chess is you still have to make the shot. You don't just get
true, like it. Right.
So it's throwing a rock, you know, long ways, and you have to kind of rely on all sorts of stuff. You get your sweepers to help you if you kind of miss a little bit.
And how about the yelling? Like there's that, especially when it's like a foreign language, mm-hmm. it's pretty wild stuff. Like everyone's yelling at the sweepers, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's sort of just how you communicate. If the louder you yell, the more the sweepers know that they need to get going and, and sweep hard. So
okay, guys. So that is Sam Swanson's version of curling, which I'm a fan, but I wish I knew more. Let's get back to elections because I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you a wild question that most people are going to be shocked at the answer. And we'll treat it like a deposition. One question. Isn't it true that in Texas, in Harris County, for some people, many thousands of people, I can look up their ballot and see how they voted?
Yes.
That's crazy. Let me repeat the answer for the transcript. Yes, it's true. When I first heard this, as you know, I was sort of skeptical.
Yeah, it seems, you know, antithetical to how voting should be done in this country. But yeah, I mean, and it's been widely reported in the news, and you can definitely look up how people vote in Texas.
So Public Interest Legal Foundation is representing three plaintiffs, I think, in Harris County, Texas, in federal court, mm-hmm. alleging that this system that allows you to look up how people voted violates their constitutional rights.
Correct.
And what is sort of the theory? Talk about the case a little bit.
Well, the theory is that voters should have a constitutional right to a secret ballot. If you don't have a right to a secret ballot, then your vote is not protected and you can face all sorts of retribution for how you vote. You could lose jobs over it. I mean, the possibilities are endless for the ways in which it could be abused. So.
Right. And I want to challenge the listeners. Think you will drive in your car or you'll be washing your hands or you'll be making breakfast and coffee and you will think of new ways that this can be abused. College admissions. Court proceedings, looking up how some lawyer voted for the judge in Texas or not. Jobs, you mentioned jobs. How about like just hiring generally? You can all sorts of different things. You will start to think, I promise, of new ways that if you can look up how you voted could be abused. How about husband and wives? I mean, think about that one. We have a Norman Rockwell painting hanging in the lobby here, I think. I think it's Norman Rockwell, and it's called Election Day. And it shows a husband holding up a picture of Dewey and a wife holding up a picture of Truman, and they're fighting, and the child's crying on the floor. Imagine looking up spouses.
Exactly.
You know, there's all sorts of, or your children, a father who's ticked off at his wayward child, and then they go look up and how they voted, and, you know, I'm writing you out of your will.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And your vote should be personal, so you should be able to vote how you feel and how you want your vote, your voice to be heard. So
we've taken on this case. You're one of the attorneys working on it. You've done a lot of briefing. Very good briefing, by the way. If you guys want to read some good, well-written George Mason-style briefs, take a look at the Public Interest Legal Foundation website and look up the Texas secret ballot case. Yet to be decided, right? And this has ramifications. This isn't just Harris County.
No, I mean, this is all of Texas, or not all of Texas, but most of the Texas counties use the same system. So it's a problem outside of Harris County. In theory, other states, probably possible too. We have to look more into that.
So that's what makes this case so important. Mm-hmm. And there are summary judgment motions. And if you're not a lawyer, that means the whole ball game, right? Like one side says we ought to win. The other side said we ought to win. It's briefed and the judge is going to decide who wins. Mm-hmm. And so whether or not you have a secret ballot, And by the way, you can go look all in history and you will not find another case, as I recall, right on point.
No, not really. In fact, I mean, we didn't always have a secret ballot in this country, and that caused all sorts of problems. This is really an invention of the 1890s, and it's worked out great. And it'd be a shame to kind of revert back to a system in which people could know your ballot.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious why. Do you have any thoughts on why this is not getting like sort of like large thousands of people mad and uproarious? Like, is it because like no one wants to think it's really possible? That's my answer. Like, no one believes that this case is possibly real.
Yeah, that's probably a majority of it, is people don't want to, you know, admit that their ballot might not be secret, that they, that anybody could kind of look it up, that the government will know how you vote. I mean, there's a lot of ramifications for
this. So the Public Interest Legal Foundation, Doug Blair went down to Texas and did a marvelous video, which like you can find somewhere on this webpage when you watch this, that you ought to see. They interview a lot of the people whose ballots, you know, are not secret, and they say why they don't want to vote. Tell everybody, and feel free to, how skeptical I was at first that you could actually look up.
Yeah, very skeptical.
Right?
As one should be. I mean, it's a kind of a crazy proposition that, you know, anybody can look up your ballot.
So that's Zimmerman versus Hidalgo is the name of the case. It's in Harris County, Texas. The Public Interest Legal Foundation is trying to fight to defend the secret ballot. Who thought we'd be here on that issue, right? With there's so many other issues related to election integrity, you never thought that whether or not your ballot is secret would be hanging in the balance like it is in federal court in Texas. Listen, Sam, thanks for stopping by for Protecting Your Vote.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. We're going to make sure the curling community sees this video.
Absolutely.
Right. So you've been watching Protecting Your Vote. I'm J. Christian Adams of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. Make sure to subscribe or like us or whatever you want to do down there in the thumbs. This is Protecting Your Vote. For more information, you can also go to publicinterestlegal.org. Thank you much.